You know what it is. Anime Death Spiral, the only anime podcast scored entirely by Tangerine Dream. We're back. We've got some anime for you. I did anime this week. I even read some anime. Some of my favorite series are ending. I'm very heartbroken about it. And I can't wait because we're an anime podcast. And we're going to do some anime this week. Isn't that right, Nate?
Hey, you guys wouldn't believe what the contract negotiations with Tangerine Dream were like. We're really lucky to be working with that.
First choice was Goblin, of course.
God, that would have been a good get.
Love a good Goblin score. They're all over my favorites. It's fun listening to that. The best Justice track is just a loop for like 6 minutes of the hook from a Goblin track that was the theme of the Giallo movie Tenebre. Have you seen Tenebre?
I haven't seen Tenebre yet. You know, I'm a big fan of Suspiria, but I haven't seen the rest of the Mother's trilogy, I think is what
It is Argento, but it's not part of the trilogy.
Yeah, okay,
like,
it's not.
Yeah, like Deep Red or whatever. It's essentially a remake of one of his earlier movies, but it is just about like, what if Stephen King went to Rome? And then, like, a deranged Stephen King fan started killing people.
What's that movie with Sutherland's paw in it? Don't Look Now?
You mean Donald Sutherland?
Yeah, you know, the...
You calling him the daddy? It's all about Donald, man. Kiefer?
No, Kiefer is obviously the one that came out on top.
This is because you're a Lost Boys kid. That's the only reason you believe this.
Listen.
I'm a start the revolution without me kid, so it's all about Donald. Donald and Gene Wilder, baby. What a classic. That's some good anime.
Donald Sutherland.
What about him?
I forgot where I was.
You already forgot. Well, let me tell you what. I did anime. I did some pretty hard anime.
Shit. That's what we were talking about. We were talking about anime.
Yeah, we're talking about anime.
Come on.
I did continue my Masterpiece Theater briefly by watching, I double dipped the Friedkin. I went back and watched Sorcerer, another great Roy Scheider performance.
Haven't heard of that one. What's Sorcerer about?
Do you know The Wages of Fear? You familiar with this?
No.
Wages of Fear? You know this one? Wages of Fear? Wages of Fear. It's a book, and also they made a Wages of Fear movie.
That was a good Leno impression.
They made a Wages of Fear movie. I want to say one of the Baldwins was in it. One of the lesser Baldwins, Stephen, maybe.
How many are there? There's at least four Baldwins, right?
There
was Stephen Baldwin the one that was in Usual Suspects?
It definitely wasn't Alec, for sure.
No. It was the younger one.
I think it's usually Stephen when it's not Alec.
Yeah, Stevie Baldwin.
Yeah.
Anyway, what about him?
Anyway, you know, Netflix is actually making a new Wages of Fear, which is kind of funny to me. Anyway, this is a book. Sorcerer is Friedkin's interpretation of the book. Even though he describes his movie as a remake of one of the best Werner Herzog movies, which is Fitzcarraldo, where they carry the boat over the mountain. You know that one?
I know about that one. That was the one where...
Klaus Kinski.
Klaus Kinski allegedly pulled a gun on Herzog.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, according to them, that happened all the time. Klaus Kinski...
Yeah, he just did that shit. He just always had a gun. He was always pulling it out.
I mean, Herzog on the set of that movie, and I think probably Aguirre, the Wrath of God as well, would consistently tell Klaus Kinski, I am going to murder you.
I mean, he should have. He should have, though.
What a crazy fucking work environment. Anyway.
Great movies. Great filmmaker.
Yeah, it's great.
Though.
I mean, no, Fitzcarraldo and Aguirre are some of the greatest movies ever made. And I really, really like Sorcerer, too. But in Fitzcarraldo, they're carrying a boat over a mountain.
Right.
And in The Wages of Fear, the book, and Sorcerer, the movie, it's about... this group of outcasts, these guys on the run due to like shitty things they did in their life, they flee to South America.
Mm-hmm. Because they were only following orders.
Well, one guy is a really bad Irish mob guy, and he holds up a church, and it turns out the church is connected to the mafia, so he has to flee the country, which I think is funny. That's Roy Scheider's character. Anyway, guys like that, they all end up down in South America.
Okay.
and they're working on this oil rig down there that's being run by this shady company. And the oil rig gets sabotaged by anti-Americans and explodes. And to clear out all the debris, this shady-ass American company has to get a stock of nitroglycerin to the site and explode the debris out of the way before they can put out the fires, right? But because this is a shady-ass company, they left their stock of nitroglycerin like out in the middle of the jungle without having anybody ever check up on it. So it is all it is essentially leaked out of the sticks and become extremely volatile in the crates.
Oh, like in Lost.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
You remember that from the first season of Lost?
Mm-hmm. It's exactly like that. In fact, I think they're ripping this off in Lost.
They're absolutely probably ripping it off.
Yeah. So they can't carry it by chopper because the chopper jiggles it too much. So this shady American company decides to hire basically a suicide squad to drive the nitroglycerin 200 miles through the fucking South American jungle to the oil site. And Roy Scheider and these guys all agree because they're basically at wit's end. They've all been living pretty shitty lives anyway. They decide they're going to drive these trucks of nitroglycerin across the jungle to the site. And let me tell you, it doesn't go great. Doesn't go great for them. It's not a good time.
Yeah. I want to say that probably the odds were stacked against them a little bit.
If you like extremely tense shots of guys who are sweating their asses off, taking nervous glances into the beds of their trucks over and over again for like, you know, an hour, 40 minutes, this is your movie. For sure.
I have nightmares like that of just being trapped in a sweaty box with people. So, yeah, I want to see that.
Yeah. Great movie. One of the best.
That and sounds like a really good anime.
It's fucking incredible. I watched that. I watched L.A. Confidential. We actually talked about that earlier. Great movie.
Did you just rewatch that recently?
Yeah, I just watched that.
Oh, no way.
Danny DeVito's whole performance in that movie is so bizarre. Great movie. I really liked it. And then after that, I watched Nocturama by Bertrand Bonello.
Nocturama.
Which is a little bit of French pulp.
I don't know. Sounds foreign to me.
I watched this because Léa Seydoux, who is in Kojima's new game and old game, so there's your anime connection, his new movie called The Beast, which is apparently like pissing off all the right people, which makes me very interested in seeing
it. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
I feel slightly bad for Léa Seydoux because the two things that she is most known for, at least in my circle so far, is A, Death Stranding,
yeah,
and B, being sexually exploited on Blue is the Warmest Color.
Well, she is in Dune Part 2, so I guess people are going to only talk about her in that context.
Oh, okay,
now.
No, that's a win for her.
Yeah.
I'd rather be the Dune 2 person than the Death Stranding person.
I know her because she did French stuff that I watch because I'm, like, better than you.
Uh-huh.
I have better taste than you. I'm more worldly than you.
Yeah, I'm just an American dope.
She was in The Lobster, which is fantastic, obviously. Greek directors rise up. She was definitely in one of those Mission Impossible movies, which I, of course, very much like quite a lot. Yeah, and Nocturama is an incredibly cynical movie. In my notes when I was watching it, I wrote down very specifically, all French movies are horror movies, which is something I truly believe.
Oh, well, they never really got over that Reign of Terror thing.
You will find untold horrors. Love French cinema.
Trip to the Moon. They shoot the fucking moon in the face.
Yeah, they shoot that motherfucker in the face. He doesn't die, though.
No.
He lives.
No, he goes right on living with a bullet in his eye.
Yeah, he lives with a bullet in his eye. Something that happened in Buchigiri, by the way. So there's your anime connection.
Nice. You know what? You know what I finally got around to watching that I enjoyed quite a bit?
What is that?
You know, I watched a little anime called, came out of Australia, little anime movie called Talk to Me last night.
Wow. Finally got around to it, huh?
I know. You know, I slept on it. I finally got around to it. And boy, man, was that a good one, you know?
Yeah.
Why didn't you tell me about it sooner, huh? Where were you?
I was afraid you wouldn't be able to handle it. Like, it's a little too intense for you, I think.
Well, you know, I grabbed an extra juice box. I had my favorite blankie with me, and I toughed it out, and I really liked it.
Good, good. It's incredible. You know, probably the best movie of 2022. I'd have to think about it, but I it's definitely a contender. Definitely a contender.
Say what you want about A24. They've been hitting it out of the park with a lot of these horror movies over the years.
Oh, I thought you were going to say what you want about Australians.
No, people know exactly what I think about Australians already.
Yeah, that movie fucking rules.
I think they look weird.
Very genre.
That's one of the things that I loved about it. You don't see a genre film played so straight like that anymore, right?
Yes.
A lot of tongue-in-cheeking going on. A lot of cheek-tonguing. In horror,
a lot of cheek tonguing, that's true.
Yeah. So the night before this, we watch Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
Yeah.
Did you see that one?
No, I skipped that one because of Pete.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I had too. I mean, it was okay. It was not the worst movie I've ever seen, but he dies within the first 15 minutes, and boy, that was too much already. but its whole thing is spoilers for people who care. About a movie that came out 3 years ago. The joke is there. Pete Davidson apparently gets murdered at the beginning. And that turns everybody into like kind of a paranoid rampage of trying to kill each other and figure out who the real killer is.
Sure.
Right?
It's a post-scream slasher.
Yes. And then the joke, the big punchline, is after everybody except for the main girl and... Yeah, the final girl and her girlfriend, and they've finally turned on each other,
mm-hmm.
and they just randomly happen upon Skeet's phone, and they find a video of him trying to do some stupid juggling trick with a big knife, and he cuts himself in the throat and kills himself.
Sure, great punchline.
I don't know, I felt that was incredibly unsatisfying, even if it was... In retrospect, like almost immediately, it was incredibly telegraphed. And I even called it right at the beginning as a joke. Maybe that's why I didn't like it. I didn't like it confirming my lame ass attempt at a joke from 50 minutes ago.
You want a movie to be smarter than you.
I would prefer a movie to be smarter than me.
Yeah, me too, I guess.
Yeah.
In that mold of the like post-Scream, I actually watched Wes Craven worked with Kevin Williamson on all those movies,
mm-hmm.
with the first few Screams and like Cursed and stuff, which is the best werewolf movie. He wrote a pandemic movie, the only pandemic movie that I actually liked.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I feel like I have to jump in and say that's not true. That's not true. American Werewolf in London is the best werewolf movie.
It's not. Anyway, Kevin Williamson's movie is called Sick, and it's about right at the beginning of the lockdown order, these teens all go and lock down in this like nice remote cabin, and it just turns into a very classic like slasher movie, and they don't try to like throw you off or do a little too clever for you thing. And it felt so refreshing to just have an 80 minute, no nonsense slasher movie in the year 2022 that I kind of couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, when's the last time they made one of these?
Yeah. I mean that, I'm into that. What was that one called again?
It's called Sick.
Sick?
Yeah.
I'm into that.
Very small cast. There's probably only like 6 or 7 people in the entire movie.
Okay. We've been wallowing in like irony and self-reference for 25 years now. I have no idea what an authentic take at a movie even looks like anymore.
Yeah. Well, can I connect it to, I can tell you exactly what it looks like, and I can connect it to anime even.
Oh God, please take me home, baby.
I can bundle this all together because I'm watching movies on the Criterion Channel, because again, I have better taste than you. I'm smarter than you. I'm more worldly. and guess what collection just landed on Criterion? You want to guess? Huh.
Tell me. Is it...
It's anime related.
The Akira Kurosawa collection.
Kurosawa didn't actually direct any anime, to my knowledge.
Oh, God, you're right.
maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know. I don't think so.
Is it the Katsuhiro Otomo collection?
No.
Two movies.
That would be just the two movies. That would be great. No, it is, in fact, the Makoto Shinkai collection.
Oh, he was my next guess.
Yes.
That's a good pull.
Almost everything he did landed on the Criterion Channel as one of their big collections. And
interesting.
He's about as sincere as you get.
I mean, you say sincere, I say saccharine.
That's the danger of being sincere, right?
Okay, well, that's interesting because Suzume just went up on Netflix. I've been meaning to watch that.
Yes. The collection is The Place Promised in Our Early Days, which is 2004. Mm-hmm. 5 centimeters per second. That was 2007.
I've seen that one.
Children Who Chase Lost Voices, which is the big one that I didn't even know about.
Okay. Yeah, I've never heard of that.
That was 2011. The Garden of Words, that's 2013. Your Name, the big one, that's 2016. Mm-hmm. And then the shorts that he did that I'd never heard of either. Voices of a Distant Star and She and Her Cat, which are two shorts he did in 2002 and 1999.
Okay.
Which I'm really interested in. I think if you look at these movies lined up, it's a weird career, man.
Yeah. You know, I've not seen a whole lot of his early stuff outside of 5 centimeters per second. I really like that one. And then I remember seeing it just because that was around the time that I was discovering that you could find anime for free on the internet. Don't tell anybody.
You were making this mind-blowing discovery.
Well, I mean, it just happened to coincide with the first time that I had my own personal computer. Go figure.
Wow.
But it was in a hard drive or a download collection that I got from somebody or somewhere.
Sure.
So I watched that, and I didn't think much of it. And then the next time Makoto Shinkai as a name caught up for me was when we watched Your Name. And I think to this day, that one's still my favorite because I was very high on mushrooms the first time I saw it.
That would do it.
Yeah.
Maybe I can get some shrooms and watch just a massive back-to-back screening of like all of these movies and see how I feel about them afterwards.
That's just like trying to dump pure emotion juice into your empty tank. See, I'm imagining you strapped to a theater chair like in A Clockwork Orange, but instead of all the horrible stuff up on the screen, it's just Koto Shinkai clips of huge emotional crescendos.
Techno-surrealist modern romance.
Yeah.
Lots of visual metaphors for longing and nostalgia for youth.
You know, my thing here is I just looked it up, and Makoto Shinkai is like, this year, he's 51. Like, dude's been playing on nostalgia since he was like 25.
Hey, man, that's his thing, dog. That's his thing. You know what I find very interesting?
Huh.
Is his stories, much like Miyazaki, are almost entirely boy meets girl stories with either a science fiction or a fantasy twist thrown in.
Well, I hear that he wants to make more diverse stories, but that's kind of like his thing. And so those are the only scripts that make it through production and get funding.
Oh, yeah? Because, I mean, this is all the movies I just listed, excluding the shorts, though, that's what those are. Every single one of them is like boy meets girl with quirky twist.
Yeah. But that's like, again, that's the thing that he got known for initially with 5 centimeters per second. And then it's like, all right, well, that's the type of movie you make now, even though he's said in interviews that he would like to branch out into other types of stories. But these are the ones that get funded.
I would love to know what he considers like these exciting other stories he's not allowed to tell, because he clearly is a bankable name. There's not a lot of bankable names in anime directing right now, but he is one of them.
I don't know. I like his stuff, even if it does get a bit samey if you watch them all together like that.
I'm excited to see. I'm gonna marathon them and see what happens. See what happens to my brain chemistry. Anyway, that was my perfect way to tie all that incredibly disparate conversation together back into anime.
And you did a great job.
And I did a great job. And it's even more perfect because I didn't actually watch any of these Makoto Shinkai movies. I was just leading us back into anime because I did watch anime. I watched some anime.
That's crazy because I think that I watched some anime too. I think I did that.
That is weird.
Yeah.
What a weird coincidence.
I know.
I wonder if we watched any of the same anime. What anime did you watch, Nate?
I think it's unlikely that we watched the same anime.
It doesn't happen very often, apparently.
All right. Well, let's start off here. I watched something that I wanted to get to last week, but we ran out of time. This is a weird little anime called Astro Note. And this is something that I brought up that I was like, no, you know what? Dude, quick Ronin. You know what? You do a lot of complaining on this show. You know that? You think about that sometimes? I'm over here trying to share my joy with the world, and you're just groaning. So that's what I think about that.
Pervert shit.
It's not.
Yeah. I know exactly what it is. I know exactly what it is from the description. It's pervert shit. You can't even deny it.
You would think that.
I do think that.
I've seen two episodes now, and they've strictly veered away from any fan servicey stuff, even though a lot of the jokes are pretty risque in nature.
Yeah, fan service isn't the only way to be pervert shit.
I've literally never thought of that before.
Yeah, now when you go forward with Astro Note, the pervert shit show, you will have a whole new perspective. And you feel even guiltier than you do now.
No, I was talking about this when we were talking about the spring lineup episode a couple weeks ago, and I thought it looked interesting. It's basically about a gourmet chef who's down on his luck. He's looking for a job.
Oh, so this is why you're watching it.
Well, you see, you have to realize that food stuff is pervert shit. We talked about
this. We did talk about that already, yes. In anime, yeah. Specifically... food is pervert shit.
And so he takes on a live-in position at this boarding house, basically.
Never heard this premise before in connection to incredible amounts of pervert shit.
And as you would expect, the boarding house is populated by a colorful cast of weirdos and outcasts, right?
Maybe some... kind of eclectic bunch of women.
That's where you falter. it does not go that direction.
Wow.
Yeah, there's only one, and it's very clear. There is a kind of romantic thing going on between our main dude and the owner of the house, who, surprise, surprise, in a Urusai Yatsura-esque twist, is an alien.
Wait, hold on. Is she an alien or is she an angel?
No, she's an alien.
She has a home planet?
She has a home planet.
Okay.
And it honestly, that actually sets me up to explain the one thing that I didn't really like.
The one thing.
Well, it was the most notable one.
Okay,
they have this running gag. They have this running gag that gets old really fast. And it must be a Japanese play on words thing getting lost in translation. But there's a bunch of gags about how our main dude has a crush on this alien princess.
Wait, she's a princess?
Yeah, she's a princess.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm telling you, they're doing the full Urusai Yatsura thing.
All right.
She's an alien princess, and she's been sent to Earth to try and locate, some MacGuffin, right? That her kingdom, her interplanetary empire, hit on Earth to stop the enemy aliens, the bad aliens, from getting their hands on it.
Why would they send the princess and not like a wet work team of SWAT assassins? Why send the princess?
Well, so the plot can happen of the show.
Oh,
so
right.
The plot of the show can happen.
Right, so that... a human loser can get horny for her. Right.
Yeah.
I forgot.
No. See, you're on the same page. You already know where this is going.
Okay. Right. Yes. For a second, I forgot that we were talking about an anime.
and so the joke revolves around how her home planet is called, at least in the, English localization, it's called Wid. And so people from there call themselves widows.
Okay.
And the enemy aliens are from a planet called, like, Hub, and so they call them Hubbies.
Ugh. Oh, I hate that.
And it sets up this kind of, like, ongoing gag where our main dude overhears conversations where they're... referring to each other like that. And he thinks that this misunderstanding that she's a widow who's sleeping around with a bunch of cheating husbands.
And how does he take that?
He doesn't like it.
He doesn't like it.
He doesn't like it at all. So I don't like that. I don't like that bit. That's not a great one, but I do like the other characters in the house. I think there's some funny ones in there.
Okay.
You know, they have one guy who's just, he looks like a standard salary man, but he's just kind of like a bum and he never goes to work and he's always stealing people's food. And no one knows where he gets his money from.
Okay, okay.
And one of the other residents is kind of like your standard frumpy nerd, like otaku girl who moonlights as an indie idol.
Ugh, I don't like that one.
Is also an alcoholic.
Oh, God.
Her gag is that she is a violent alcoholic and gets like aggressively protective of people trying to steal her beer that she stores in the communal fridge.
Well, I don't like that, but I guess I don't hate it either.
You're neutral on it.
I'm pretty neutral on it. Can you give me one detail that might sell me on the show?
Well, I mean, it's good. I gotta think about it. I gotta sell it to you. I'm trying to tell.
Wow. Okay. No, that's your silence speaks louder than words. Okay, that's Astronote. Sounds awesome.
You're so mean to me.
Can I tell you about one of mine?
Yeah, please.
Okay. My watch group decided to watch a couple of premieres. The Fable, the premiere of The Fable. Because this is one I read and it's all right. The animation's kind of interesting. It's very true to the comic, which already had sort of an interesting art style. I think it's pretty funny. I don't know. There's not that much to say. The premise is so cut and dry. Either you like that idea or you don't. And I already described that for the most part, right?
That's the one about the Yakuza guy trying to lay low.
Yeah, he's a talented hitman whose boss sends him to live as a normal person for a year with his handler.
And just because, like, to teach him humility, or is he trying to avoid the cops or something?
It's not entirely clear. I mean, they allude to, like, the heat rising because a couple of hits, and also that the boss maybe wants him to chill out a little bit.
Hey, buddy, you like killing too much. You need to take a little sabbatical.
Hitman story, basically exactly what you'd expect. I kind of like it.
Is it funny? Looked like it might have been funny.
No, I think it's funny. I like the jokes in it.
Okay. All right. Well, can I bring up another one that I watched?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. This is another one that I was looking forward to. Bartender, Kami no Glass.
Yes.
Or The Glass of God.
Absolutely.
And... Listen, you've never experienced the glass of God, or else you would know. You would know what I'm talking
about. Isn't that the Holy Grail?
No, that's a different thing.
That's a different thing. The glass of God is
a completely different thing.
The glass
of
God
is above the Holy Grail.
Really?
It's above the Holy Grail. What
do you drink aqua vitae out of the glass of God?
It's literal deity cum.
The fountain of youth. You know what's in there, right?
In the aqua de vita, right?
Yeah, God's pre-cum.
Yeah. Oh, God.
So that's what this show is about, right?
No. This show is a fun little anime about the best bartender in Japan. As you would expect, he's kind of that archetype of the philosophical...
Yeah, the bartender from The Shining.
Hey, well, okay, which bartender? Are we talking about Stanley Kubrick Shining or Dr. Sleep?
Oh, Kubrick Shining, for sure.
No. What was I trying to say? He's like that archetype of the philosophical scamp. You know, he's like a kind of a goofy dude. He's disorganized, but he's really, really good at doing his one job, which is making drinks and dispensing invaluable life advice.
Yeah, he's the philosophical drifter type.
Yeah.
Sort of a Swayze in Roadhouse.
Yeah, that's a good one. You know, he doesn't do quite as much karate.
That is a shame. Like, before we get into all the other stuff, wouldn't this show benefit from like just a little bit of karate?
It might show up. We're still early. There's okay. only two episodes out.
Okay, maybe later on.
But the first episode is centered around these two hotel employees that work in the recruiting office, and their job is to try and find the best bartender in Japan to work at their new luxury bar that's opening at the top floor of this hotel.
Bartender poachers?
Yeah. Yeah, they're poaching bartenders.
Wow.
They've been set on a holy task by the CEO of the company to go find the bartender that can make him the glass of God.
Okay, so again, like the beginning of Roadhouse.
I've never seen Roadhouse, so I'm just gonna trust you on this one.
You have to see Roadhouse.
I don't have to see Roadhouse.
You gotta see Swayze and Roadhouse, dog. The beginning of Roadhouse is Swayze being headhunted to be the new lead bouncer at the Double Deuces.
So a little bit of that going on here. They are trying to snipe this guy to come work at their new fancy bar.
Sure, sure.
And you know, they do a lot of following him around, right?
That's creepy.
They initially run into him by accident because he just looks like a bum. He's sleeping on a bench in a park that they're eating lunch in while they're out looking at other bars trying to find a good bartender to poach.
Okay.
And so eventually they get recommended to this guy. They go to his bar, and he impresses them by making them, this one chick, who also happens to be the granddaughter of the hotel CEO. So, you know, some nepotism going on there.
Wow.
And he makes her the most amazing highball whiskey that she's ever had in her entire life. And you know, she goes in, she says, all right, make me a drink that's perfect for me without knowing anything about me, and you can have this job. And he hands her a highball whiskey, just whiskey and soda water.
He doesn't put anything special in it?
Well, it's the way he makes it. And do you want to know what the secret ingredient is?
LSD.
No, he has, according to him, extra hard ice that doesn't melt as fast.
What?
Yeah.
He has special ice.
He has special ice. And so it doesn't melt and water down the drink as fast. And that's why it's so good. Now, I'm willing to trust their science on this because they go into a big explanation on how to make this special melt-resistant ice.
Wait, they teach you how to do it? How do you do it?
Yeah. Well, apparently you have to have an industrial freezer.
Great.
First and foremost.
Okay.
And then you freeze a large block of ice, and then you have to let it freeze for at least 11 days. Because apparently the longer ice freezes, the harder it gets. And then you chip out the...
Is that true?
I think that might be true.
Okay.
I don't know. The anime said it.
I mean, I don't know enough to dispute it.
Anime wouldn't lie to me. Anime's never lied to me.
Not about ice.
Never about ice.
Never about ice.
And so you take the... You chip out the core of that giant block of ice, and you chip the core into little cubes... And then you freeze those cubes for another few days in a dry cooler. And that apparently hardens them even further.
Now, you said cubes.
Yes. So
not the classic whiskey ball of ice.
No.
The spherical ice.
These were hand chipped cubes.
Now, did anybody ever tell him about whiskey stones?
Well, you know, there's a lot of discourse out there on whiskey stones.
Oh, are whiskey stones contentious? Is there like
they are, in fact. You know, there's an entire faction of whiskey aficionados that believe that adding just a smidgen of water, just enough that melts off the ice over the course of drinking the drink, that activates certain flavor compounds in the whiskey that's not present straight.
I'm not buying it. I think they just like watered down whiskey.
Well, you know, to each their own.
I'm going to go post very angrily about this on the whiskey Reddit.
Oh, God, not again. At first she's like, well, you know, I just started working at this bar. I don't want to stop working here to go work for you guys, because that would be kind of shitty of me, because I like my boss.
Wow.
And so now we are at a point where it's like they're going back to his bar every day trying to convince him to come work for their fancy bar. And through the course of these nights, they interact with other customers and hear their stories and get to watch him mix them the most perfect of enlightening cocktails.
I got to say, that's not very Swayze of him. Swayze quits on the spot. He hands the dude his fucking jacket and is like, I'm out. Peace.
Well, you know what? This guy isn't, he's not in it for greed like Swayze is. He's not in it for the violence.
Swayze is not in it for greed or the violence. Swayze is about being the master of your domain, but not in the Seinfeld way.
I don't know. The way you're selling this, Swayze sounds like the villain of this movie.
Swayze brings order to chaos. That's what his whole deal is.
Oh, he's a fascist is what you're saying.
Well, he does rule with an iron grip. I can't argue with that, but he does it in a loving way.
Does he make the trains run on time?
He doesn't let the tips go out in somebody's pocket, let me tell you that. Speaking of, tipping isn't really a thing in Japan, right?
No, it's not.
Why would you be a good bartender if nobody's tipping you for it? What's the point?
Well, I mean, we have to start from the position that they actually get paid a living wage for doing their job.
Okay, but you said he was a bum sleeping on a park bench.
No, he just acts like a bum.
Oh, so he just does that for fun. He actually has a living wage.
Yeah, no, he just fell asleep on a park bench, and he's kind of airheaded, you know.
Okay.
He's a, you know, he's just kind of a chill dude. He doesn't do the whole a hierarchy thing, right?
He doesn't do the whole like staying awake when you're at the park thing.
Yeah, if it's a nice sunny day out and you get a little sleepy, you just take a little lay down, take a rest on the park bench. There's nothing wrong with that.
I guess in a country that benches in America are formulated so you literally physically can't sleep on them now. So yet another reason this show doesn't work for an American audience.
They put big old video game spikes on them now that shoot up whenever you get close.
Yeah, those pigeon spikes.
All right, so I don't know. I like it. I think it's fun. I think it's a fun little show. I like seeing him wow people with his superior cocktail creating skills. And they take shots at the flashy bartenders right at the beginning.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they take shots.
No, actually, nobody's taken a shot yet.
Nobody's taken a shot.
Shots are a bit uncouth. They're a bit college, if you know what I mean.
So he's not a good enough bartender to spice up a shot. He can't figure out how to make a shot fancy.
Well, only two episodes in.
Okay.
We shall see.
Maybe he tackles shots as like the final boss of the season.
Well, here, let me tell you this. This is a list of drinks that he has served in the show so far.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah, lay it on me.
All right. So we start off. We got martini.
Classic.
And he does the etiquette correct move of asking whether the customer has eaten yet before they order a martini.
Does he ask shaken or stirred?
No, because you never shake a martini, you fucking barbarian. What are you even thinking? You sound like an Englishman.
Excuse me. My mistake.
Apparently it's a faux pas to order a martini on an empty stomach. Never heard that, but apparently that's true.
Okay, that's weird. I had an espresso martini the other day, one of the most disgusting drinks I've ever tried.
Well, then maybe you would prefer a grasshopper. They serve that in the show. In the Pousse Café style for the Frenchmen out there.
Okay.
Now, right. are you familiar with what the Pousse Café style is?
No, I'm unfamiliar.
That is the technique of layering different ingredients that have different densities, right? So that they appear in a striated format in the glass.
Oh, the layer cake.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the
yes.
layer cake effect.
Sure.
And so a grasshopper is in this style would be a bottom layer of creme de menthe, and then a layer of creme de cacao, and then a layer of cream on top.
Sounds disgusting.
It's a dessert drink, you know? You don't like chocolate mint? What, are you anti-chocolate mint?
I don't like drinking cream. to begin with. I think that's maybe my stumbling block.
Yeah, it's a big hurdle to get over, but when you mix it with the other flavors, I think it works out. It thins it out a bit for sure.
I'll have to take your word for it, because I'm never ordering that. Sounds disgusting.
We got the whiskey highball, as I described before, the most perfect of whiskey highballs. We got just a classic beer. Sometimes you just need a beer. You don't need a fancy cocktail.
What kind of beer?
Right?
What beer sponsored the show?
Well, obviously Kirin Ichiban.
It's Kirin? I was going to say, well, it could have been an Asahi.
It could have been Asahi. Well, okay, that is actually one thing that I noted about this show. This is, as far as I can tell, fully funded and advertised by all of the liquor companies. You know how anime does that thing of like, you know, they make up the fake name, the fake brand name or whatever.
Yeah.
When they want to show something on screen. Not here. These are all brand labels, front and center.
Hell yeah, dude.
And they linger on those labels a long time. All mixing hardware and all glasses provided by a company called Birdie, apparently.
Okay.
Is a big manufacturer of this these type of tools for bartenders in Japan.
Sure, sure.
Prominently shown right up close. So they are not skimping out. And the funding shows, because, man, that is the most animated cocktail shaking animation that I have seen.
Yeah.
They got the crazy noodle arms going on. It's very funny to watch.
What's their vodka? Tell me the vodka choice.
What do they have?
Is it Grey Goose?
I don't think that they showed the vodka bottle that, well, that goes to the next drink that I have on the list here. He makes a Cosmo.
Okay.
But I don't think they show the bottle of what brand vodka it was. I could probably pull up a screenshot of what the back of his bar looked like. He's got a bunch in there. He serves something called an Old Pal, which is a drink that I had not heard of before, but I think it looks kind of good.
Yeah.
Yeah, an Old Pal is basically a twist on a Negroni. So we got more like a Manhattan, I guess. Twist on a Manhattan. We got rye whiskey. We got Campari, dry vermouth, and a lemon twist. That's an Old Pal. I'd drink that. That sounds kind of good.
I don't really like vermouth. I mean, tying back into the I don't like martinis thing.
Well, you know, I like bitter stuff. I like bitter drinks. Sure. I drink this.
Now, you did trigger my one other question about this. Does he have a barback sidekick?
No, he's solo.
He washes his own dishes.
He washes his own glasses. He mixes his own drinks. He's working alone most nights.
A lone wolf. Wow.
Yeah. That's the kind of guy he is, you know. His catchphrase, I'm trying to remember what his catchphrase is. He has a long spiel, but he says it a couple times where he talks about...
I think you've had enough.
That should be his catchphrase. That'd be a great one. Sir, I think you should leave quietly.
I'm waving Swayze over.
No, he talks about how, like, in this world, there are only two professions that require total honesty with their customers.
Only two?
Only two.
The other one better be doctor.
Well, yeah, yes, kinda. What he said pharmacist.
Pharmacist?
Yeah.
You're drug dealer. So you're drug dealer. He's saying you're drug dealer.
you're drug dealer. It's like, basically, the people that mix the stuff that you put in your body, those are the only ones that you want to have trust in. You want to make sure you trust those guys.
Be a facts and logic guy in that scenario. Be like, you, sir, are a drug dealer. Did you think about that?
Well, he obviously includes bartenders. He says two professions. Pharmacists and bartenders.
He is also a pharmacist.
Actually, those are the same thing.
Pharmacology is the same as selling alcohol, which is also a drug, a mind-altering substance. So essentially...
You gotta say it faster and more angry.
Okay, actually, alcohol is a pharmacological substance, so if you're selling it, pharmacology product, you're basically a pharmacist as well. So, like,
oh god, I can feel those right-wing grifter dollars flowing in already. All right, we got two drinks left on this list that they've served.
Go through.
And really, the second one is a variation on the first, so we'll just count them together. But he serves something called a bull shot. You want to take a guess at what this is?
A bull shot.
Yes.
Man. Give me one hint. Is it liqueur based?
No, it is hard liquor based.
Wow. Is it bourbon?
Nope.
A bull shot and it's not bourbon?
Well, why are you tying bulls to bourbon?
It just seems like the natural fit. I don't know. Tell me, what is it?
A bull shot is a cup of beef bouillon soup with a shot of vodka in it.
That's disgusting.
It'll warm you up on a cold winter's night. And you know, he does a variation on this that he calls a bloody bowl, which is the same thing, but with tomato juice and lemon added, making it kind of like a Bloody Mary.
That's even more disgusting.
Do you like a Bloody Mary? You ever drink a Bloody Mary? I don't like them.
Yeah, I'll have a Bloody Mary if I'm having brunch, but that's because, you know, I'm mixing it together with my Eggs Benedict with the Hollandaise and my hash browns covered with Tabasco sauce.
Now just imagine that it's served piping hot and it tastes like beef.
Yeah, also I would never drink a hot one. That sounds awful.
Well, you would never drink a hot toddy?
Not a huge fan of a hot toddy anyway.
Okay, all right.
It's the name. The name really throws me.
So, well, the name of the show, as we said, is Glass of God, and that is that's what they call his ability. To instantly know what someone's perfect cocktail is.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
He can make the glass of God.
And as he watches his clients stumble drunkenly away, dropping things from their pockets and almost hitting themselves on the doorframe, he goes, "Go with God, my child."
Well, man, what I would really like to see is, because obviously the format is someone comes in and they're sad or mad about something.
Naturally.
And he you know, listens to their bullshit life story and then makes them an amazing drink that turns their day around and gives them a new outlook, right?
Bleak.
That's
bleak.
That's the way this works.
Yeah.
Well, I just once I would like for a guy to come in who's just totally spiraling. You know, just going on a bender and destroying himself. And this guy be like, yep, I'll keep serving him. He's paying me. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, if it's more realistic, the guy would stumble in and he'd be like, what would be the drink that would fix how much I hate my wife?
Yeah. He just hands him a can of rat poison. Here, on the house.
I mean, he needs more Homer Simpsons to stumble into his bar.
Yeah.
I'm just here to get away from my kids. Oh, wow. Okay. I guess the Kieran holding company probably wouldn't want me to serve him one of their fine products.
Probably not. But yeah, that's Bartender, the Glass of God.
Wow, Bartender, the Glass of God. That's wild shit.
So crazy.
I watched a premiere, which in Japanese is called Kai to Otome to Kami Kakushi. And in English, I have been assured, is called the much simpler Mysterious Disappearances.
Okay.
Yes.
I assume this is about some people mysteriously disappearing.
You know what, nobody mysteriously disappeared in the first episode, so
oh wow, maybe, so 0 out of 10.
Yeah, maybe not. The main character doesn't show up for work for a week. Does that count as a disappearance?
No, that's just called being a millennial.
It's just quiet quitting.
Yeah.
so
that's just not going to your job anymore.
I really want to read the description of this show. Here's the first sentence, and I feel like this really gives away what the whole show's tone is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sumireko Ogawa is a busty bookstore clerk who wants to become a novelist after some writing success in her youth. And you're thinking, yeah, weird to point out, to just call out the busty nature of this bookstore clerk. Right there in the first sentence of the description.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if that's just flavor text. No, the show is mostly about how big her tits are.
You know what? I saw a trailer for this. This is Ringing Bells. I saw a trailer for this when I was looking at the spring lineup. Yeah. Okay. So what's the deal?
The show makes a pretty big deal about how big her tits are.
I mean, they're pretty big.
They're very big. And the central conflict, I mean, this is maybe a little bit of an oversimplification, but the big conflict in episode one is that her tits get smaller.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all right. So So you're feeling probably pretty embarrassed now for calling Astronaut a perv show, right? For making fun of me for watching that, which is totally innocent compared to the big-boobed lady bookstore tiny baby boy anime.
I do not feel any embarrassment at all because...
You should. You should feel ashamed. You should feel embarrassed. You should feel mortified at yourself.
Here's the big difference is you liked that show. Yeah.
Okay, but who really lost here? Someone who watched an episode of a bad show that they liked, or someone who watched an episode of a bad show that they didn't like?
You. You lost. It's obviously you. This show is very simple. The setup from the first episode onward seems to be this woman works at a bookstore. She has her own kind of personal hang-ups about, like I mentioned, being a failed writer. Her coworker is seemingly a very young man, perhaps a boy, who is consistently making sexual comments about her body, which she kind of laughs off.
You know, as you do as a woman, I'm sure. It's a survival mechanism. You just have to do it.
Yep. She takes it in stride, even though she clearly is not a fan of it. But continues onward, and apparently this is supposed to endear us to these pair of characters. Didn't work on me, but hey, you know I have very particular tastes. I've mentioned it before. The setup is basically girl with giant breasts discovers a magical object or other supernatural phenomena. The boy, who seems to be a regular boy, is in fact some sort of boy with a supernatural phenomena connection in his shady past.
Right.
Together, they solve the case
of
the supernatural phenomena. That's pretty much it. Occasionally, the supernatural phenomena will involve the woman's breasts.
By occasionally, you mean every episode it comes up.
Possibly. I've only seen the one. But it definitely involved her breasts, so that's the show.
All right.
It seems bad. Seems really bad.
And why'd you pick this one?
Well, because I like mysteries, and I like mysterious disappearances. I did not realize how much the show would center around the woman's breasts.
Oh, I see. You made the classic blunder of judging a book by its cover.
Well, I just, you know, when I read that description about... Sumireko Ogawa is a busty bookstore clerk. I figured, oh, that's just the guy who's writing the description, you know, is your regular anime fan who is pointing out.
No, that's just what it's about.
Yeah, no, I feel bad for disparaging the person who wrote this because that was what it was.
What's that Maya Angelou quote? Believe someone the first time when they tell you who they are.
I'm not sure that's Maya Angelou, but yes, sure. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I'm right about that.
Yeah. I don't like that. I don't like that.
You don't like it.
Don't like it. Yeah, and you know, the thing that makes me hesitate to write it off completely is this was something that happened with Meruko-chan. You remember me talking about that one?
Yeah, I've seen that one.
The girl
too.
who avoids ghosts. Yeah. And the first couple episodes are like, they really like viciously sexualize this young girl and then completely let off the gas for like the rest of the show. I assume just because like, you know, this is again, one of the incredibly cynical tactics of like, we need to hook the audience. Like, why would young boys watch this show about teen girl friendship?
Yeah.
Unless they had the promise of like seeing her underwear or whatever. And I ended up really liking Meiruko-chan as it went along because, like I said, it let up the gas on that stuff and kind of moved more towards like kind of a light show with some kind of edgy supernatural stuff bleeding in around the corners, which I really like. And so there is the possibility that happens with this show. But man, I did not get the feeling from this first episode that anything particularly interesting was going to happen outside of the context of this woman's gigantic breasts.
And so you're gonna go back and watch every episode, right?
I might, you know what I might do is watch the final episode of the season and see if that
might be fun, see where it ends up.
Yeah, if that episode is also about her giant breasts, then I will feel very smug and satisfied with my conclusion. Otherwise, I will feel foolish and embarrassed.
All right. We'll put a pin in that one and get back to you about it.
Yeah.
All right. This is something that I wasn't expecting to like, and I ended up actually kind of liking it. I watched the first episode of Kaiju 8 that just came out. Kaiju number 8.
Yes.
Well, you know, I thought that it was going to be... I'm not super huge on shonen stuff. The Jump lineup has not wowed me in a long time because I'm not a little child who likes stupid child things.
Yes, and you're a grown man who likes stupid child things.
Yeah, it's a big difference.
It's a big difference.
And so I wasn't like super jazzed on this, but I thought I'd give it a shot because I like the monster design of the main dude just from like screenshots and scans of the manga that I've seen around.
Sure.
I think his design looks kind of cool.
It's all right.
But I found the first episode, at least, I don't know. I got to look up who animated this because it looks amazing. It's really fucking good. Some real top-notch anime. And the monster designs, even though they are using 3D modeling, do not look bad. And in fact, the 3D animation looks pretty good. I can't say this for sure. I think that the first kaiju that we see in the series is like being a very clear ripoff of one of the legendary Pokemon from Ruby Sapphire, Groudon, I think. They look almost exactly the same, and I think that's pretty funny. But I think the animation's cool. It has a fucking banger soundtrack. It's got this awesome, like, weird, scratchy jazz guitar kind of solo backing track throughout most of the action. That kind of shifts in and out with this jazz drum track. They're doing almost like a Birdman thing, kind of, with matching the action to the drum beat. It's very cool.
That's cool.
I liked it a lot.
I like the sound of that.
And, you know, I think just the concept of a dude who...
He's a were-kaiju.
I shouldn't say that...
He's a were-kaiju.
He's a were-kaiju, which is by far the least interesting aspect...
It sucks.
...of the show.
It sucks really bad.
And we talked about this because it sounded much more interesting when he was doing the kaiju cleanup stuff.
Yes.
And talking about how much his life sucks. Like, being a cleanup dude.
This is the only reason I thought that, like, you would like the first episode, because the first episode would be the only part of the show that includes the cool part, the kaiju cleanup stuff.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I'll give it a shot, but I really liked the first episode. I'll say that.
Sure.
I thought it was cool.
I would say it is only going to get worse.
All right. Well, you know, how many volumes? How long has this been going on? A while,
a
right?
while. It's pretty popular. And let me tell you, It does not take it very many chapters to become lowest common denominator shonen shit.
Yeah, there's 12 volumes of the manga already.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, anime was done by Production IG, by the way. That's why it looked good.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. All right. I'm probably not going to stick with this just because I am loath to get into any series that runs on too long.
I would say it's gone too long, but I will say it gets very boring.
So, I don't know. I think I was just very wowed by the production values
sure.
of that first episode.
Sure, sure.
But we'll see. We'll see. I don't plan on making a long-term commitment, you know? I like to play the field.
Yeah, yeah.
Keep my options open, you know?
Oh, definitely.
You know, I'm kind of a swinger like that.
Uh-huh. That is your reputation around town.
All right. What was your last one? What was your last one?
I watched one more thing. Besides, obviously, episode 2 of Go-Go Loser Ranger, but I can rave about that another time. I fucking love Go-Go Loser Ranger.
Love that show. Loving that show, man.
Speaking of training arcs, I watched the first episode, finally, of X-Men 97, baby.
Oh, you finally got around to it. Okay.
We cracked that shit open. We let the X-Men's out.
Now, I technically watched the first episode, but... it was without sound because I was watching it from another dude's phone from like three seats back on a plane ride that I was on a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's probably the most optimal way to view that show.
You must have loved it if your eyes were glued to it from three seats back.
It was a Delta flight, so you got to keep yourself distracted.
Well, let me tell you, I did watch it with the sound on, which I'm not sure if I
bet you regret doing that.
I mean, maybe a little bit.
I think I did it better. I think I did the better version.
Except, you know, that main theme still bangs. Like, oh, it's easily the best part of the show.
Oh, the one part that they didn't create themselves?
This is a new version, obviously, but it's very faithful to the original. And it sounds great. It fucking rules. I love the theme. What a great theme. What I didn't love so much is the team. Now, obviously, I did not keep up with the original X-Men cartoon as I grew up. I, as we've mentioned before, didn't have television, so it would have been hard to begin with. But I have to say, again, like, so I don't know what happened with the story to set this all up, but I don't necessarily like that the team composition is how it is right now. It is Cyclops, Jean Grey, of course, Storm, of course, Wolverine, of course. Morph,
mm-hmm.
for some reason, is in the core team now.
Okay. Sure, why not?
You know, Rogue in there, of course. I understand that. Beast, of course. I'm not really sure why Gambit is in the main team now, but that's
fine.
Well,
because he was kind of like, he was a cameo character. He was a lone wolf dude. He would come in every once in a while. But by the end of that original series run, he had been recruited to live at the mansion. And so
I don't know.
And so they are trying to pick up, you know, exactly where that left off.
Yeah, no, I get that. And then, of course, you know, Jubilee's in there because you got to have your bubbly 90s teen. But then the last mm-hmm. slot goes to Lucas Bishop.
By the way, did you know that Jubilee isn't that's not like a mutant superhero nickname?
No, that's her real name. Yes, I know. I know.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's her real full name is Jubilant Lee.
Yes, I've heard that. Yes, it's her name is actually Jubilee. It's
what
very,
I'm trying to say is the X-Men is dumb.
X-Men is dumb. But I just think this team composition is very strange. That like Bishop and Morph are in here. I don't really like that.
I understand the Cyclops, Wolverine, Jean Grey, because that's our Naru Sasukara, right? That's our anime trio.
Sure, yeah.
And I understand, like you said, Jubilee, gotta have her. Gotta have Storm. You gotta have all the favorites back, right?
But Storm is the most powerful of all these mutants.
Well, yeah, she can control the weather.
Yeah.
You know, we already see what that can do in JoJo with Weather Report,
yes,
right?
Absolutely. The most powerful mutant is still second in command to fucking Scott Summers. Not good.
I mean,
like, that sucks.
Not even that. You know, she's royalty, right? Like, she's literally a queen.
She is? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, in her home country, she's literally a queen.
So why is she playing second in command to fucking Cyclops? This is Professor X's bias showing, you know? He had an incredible candidate, and he chose
these characters
Cyclops.
Were created in the 60s, the civil rights movement. It all got a little complicated, all right?
I'm just saying.
What, are you a commie?
And, of course, this is post-Professor X, right, in the cartoon canon now. X is dead.
He died, baby.
He fucking died. So Scott is a temporary leader, and he's talking about, you know, retiring because they've got the baby on the way, seeing Jean Grey's pregnant belly is like a big part of episode one.
Oh yeah, you know, it's a fetish thing, right?
Yeah, her waddling around a big pregnant lady. Yeah. Which is all fine, but the fact that that doesn't immediately become like, hey, Storm, can you take over the team, is again, it's like very offensive to me.
Yeah, no, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, who are you gonna get to lead the team? Wolverine? No.
He doesn't want to do it.
The only other person would be Beast, maybe, but he doesn't want to do it either.
Well, I mean, I'll be dead before I let an Englishman lead my X-Men.
He just has an Atlantic accent. He's not actually English. Yeah, this was a weird show. This was really weird. It seems very faithful in its presentation to the 90s one. I think there's some pretty cool action sequences. It looks good.
Does it look good? I don't know. I saw some clips. The animation looks a little weird to me.
It is weird. In the episode one, at least, it is weird, I think, in a way that it's trying to be faithful, which I appreciate, and trying to strike a balance between, like, good animation and faithful animation is a very difficult, like, tightrope, And I think they did a good job navigating that.
All right.
It's not the best. I would have preferred them to just make it look good instead of being faithful, but I understand that this is obviously a huge nostalgia project, so I'm not going to complain too much about it. You know what I mean?
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, it's again, a symptom of a creatively bankrupt production process.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm sorry.
Know.
I just, yeah, I'm so fucking over nostalgia at this point.
It's not good.
Self-reference and reboots. In fact, I'm just going to say I hate this on principle.
Holy shit.
And I I kind of liked the X-Men cartoon when I was a kid.
He's going off.
I am their target demographic, and this is making me resentful of
somebody's
my own.
Somebody's got to stop this guy. He's saying the most controversial shit I've ever heard.
You know, a hot take, but pandering is bad.
I got to read this guy's letterboxed. I like X-Men. I think they're cool. I don't like Morph. I don't care very much for Bishop because he has probably the lamest gimmick out of every X-Men.
Well, he's from the future, right? Wait, no, that's Cable.
Yeah, Cable's from the future. Bishop is the guy who absorbs energy and then shoots it back by doing like a weird like body contortion chest move, which I don't think is good.
Right. But like, I'm not wrong. They look similar.
Bishop and Cable are they have very similar vibes.
Yeah. You know what? That's because they're both designed by Rob Liefeld.
Yes. The Liefeld.
Liefeld guy. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I also don't love where they are at the story. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, X-Men wise, I think this whole like working with the US government to like blow up rogue CIA agents is like just, I don't know, there's something about it that rubs me wrong. I don't like the X-Men working that closely with the government, I guess, is the part that I don't like.
I mean, why wouldn't they? The X-Men, you got to accept this, people. The X-Men are cops. Like, they're just fucking cops.
They are cops. They definitely are cops.
And that makes them suck.
Yes, but it drives that point home very clearly when they're, like, coordinating with, like, the Department of Homeland Security. I don't like that. I don't like that. Leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah, I don't like the implications of it, you know.
But the twist they add at the end being that, like, Magneto is the leader of the X-Men now by Professor X's will is a fun twist. And that does seem like a clean break from working with Homeland Security, you know. I don't think they're going to collaborate with Magneto, the most infamous mutant terrorist in the history of the world.
Oh man, what if Harvard was like, hey, you know, nothing we can do, but weird loophole, Ted Kaczynski's now, he's the dean. He's the dean of Harvard.
I, you know what, I don't know what to say, but it's a legal document, so what yeah. are we gonna do?
The lawyer said Ted's the dean now, he's my boss.
Also, this Magneto basically looks like Geralt from Witcher 3. He has basically the exact same look.
He's always, cartoon Magneto's always been sexy. I think actually just Magneto's always been sexy in general. That's just his deal. He's a buff older dude.
That's what you're into, huh? Okay, final thought. Wolverine is too tall.
Still? They still making him tall?
He's still tall. I don't like
that. He should be like 5'2".
Yeah, in fact, they have multiple... this episode's only like 20 minutes long, and they play pickup basketball like 3 times.
Well, that's the most 90s thing about it.
Yeah, and Wolverine is like... he's playing like center, but he's still at least 6 foot. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
I mean, he can jump.
Canadians can jump.
Well, Wolverines at least can jump.
Yeah, and also I could not stop laughing because the whole episode, Wolverine is doing his like Wolverine, like petulant child thing, and we kept going like, he's 150 years old.
Yeah, but he has memory loss. He has memory
but
loss.
But he's a grandpa. I mean, he is a fucking grandpa.
Well, you see, his healing factor doesn't work on his emotional stunting.
Yes, that has always been his main problem, Rick.
I need to heal everything but this broken heart.
Let's take a break and activate our healing factors.
All right.
Thank you.
man, welcome back from the break. Anime Death Spiral.
Still Anime Death Spiral.
Still Anime Death Spiral. Still here.
We talked about it during the break, about changing the name, but nope, we're sticking with it.
What were some of the alternatives? The Anime Store?
Anime Hope Spiral.
Yeah, Anime Hope Spiral. That one got shot down pretty hard by the testers.
Anime Bang Bang.
we ran into some legal trouble with that one.
The Google searches wouldn't have been great.
Anyway, you know what I just finished watching, Remy? Oh. You know what I just finished watching?
What'd you finish watching?
Right, well, when we were on when we were on that break, I went and watched the trailer that just came out for the Look Back movie. You see that? You see that trailer?
Oh, you're trying to be a little timely. Keeping your finger on the pulse, huh?
I have a vested interest in the works of Tatsuki Fujimoto. I am one of those lowest common denominator Chainsaw Man fans.
You absolutely are.
I do. I am a basic bitch.
Yep.
I do like the popular stuff.
Absolutely.
So obviously, I got to show my support for my man out there, and I want to see this movie. Although, can I tell you one thing that I was kind of taken aback by?
Taking a look back?
Taking a look back by. Hey, he gets it. He's doing the wordplay.
I hate that.
I was not expecting it to be 3D. Did you know that already?
Look, it's inescapable. I think moving forward from here, there's essentially never going to be a non 3D-ish anime in our lifetimes.
I mean, I don't like thinking about that at all.
We've crossed that bridge and burned it behind us. There's no going home again. So I'm just rolling with it.
I mean, it's hard to accept. I'm going to be honest. I've seen some decent looking 3D stuff in recent years. It's not all trash. I'll admit that. But I'm just saying I wasn't expecting it in this case because this is still coming from MAPPA, who just did the Chainsaw Man anime, which had a little bit of 3D stuff in it, but was mostly, at least had the filter of a 2D animation over the 3D models.
Have you read Look Back?
Not completely. I started.
This is a fucking fake fan.
I'm a fake fan.
This is a fake gamer girl. Oh my god. Well, I have read it, and it is good. I never expected it to be a movie. Frankly, because it's very melancholy. There's not exactly like a clean rising action and then climax and release of tension, you know?
I mean, I wouldn't expect a particularly happy-go-lucky story to come from Fujimoto. You know, I have read Fire Punch. Obviously, I've read Chainsaw Man. I just haven't read, you know, his short stuff, his one-shot stuff.
Well, I will say,
which is, you know, an oversight on my part, I'll admit.
Yeah.
It's on my list.
Well, even before diving in here, I feel like I just want to say I really don't like add this to the big pile of, like, commonly used terms that I shit talk constantly, but, like, I don't like the term one-shot. I think that's really bad. I think it's a bad term.
It does feel a bit juvenile. I'll say that. What would you say is a better term for single chapter, you know, story?
Short story?
Yeah.
Novella, you know?
But that could also encompass something that's, you know, 5 chapters, 10 chapters.
Graphic novel, perhaps.
Can we not? Can we fucking not?
You don't like that one.
I do not like that term. I do not like graphic novel.
I think graphic novel's funny because it is almost like bad in the complete opposite way of one shot. Whereas I feel one shot establishes a consumer relationship with the product that is inherently misleading and bad. And that one shot implies that things are by default serializations. And that a one-shot is a special class of manga that will not have a chapter 2, right? And so in that way, it devalues the idea of the short story, the short contained story to begin with. And it centers short stories as consumer products before you even know, like, what it is. I think graphic novel, on the other hand, is much like the term elevated horror, in that it puts down the product as a pulp, a genre piece before you've even gotten into it to discover like what the content is. So they're both not good.
Well, okay, my issue with graphic novel is that I think that it's a reactionary term from people who are too embarrassed to admit that comic books like are for little kids and like elevated horror. They want a term to distinguish what they read from a pulp genre.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, sure. It's like the creation of genre itself. It's about creating distinctions. You know, the social is predicated on its exclusions, if I have to borrow mm-hmm. a term from another podcast. And those exclusions are how people define their tastes more often than not. And I feel like one shot is itself sort of an exclusionary term because, like I said, it sets up the expectation by default that all manga stories have to be told in serialization. And it's used to essentially wipe out the idea of the short story or the novella, which brings me back to Look Back, because Look Back and, by extension, Goodbye Airy are essentially novellas.
Mm-hmm.
They're very long.
Well, they're multi-chapter, right? They're short format. They have an ending. You know, they're not an ongoing story that has to be continued upon each week, obviously.
Well, like, for example, Goodbye Airy is 200 pages. That meets the standard definition of a novella very easily.
Yeah, sure. All right, well, let me ask you this then. Are there any other short format graphic novels produced in Japan that you would like to recommend?
Well, because Look Back is here and we don't really get a lot of opportunities ever to like mention one shots, I did want to like shout out some other quote-unquote one-shots, and I am going to cheat and maybe sneak in a couple of short anthologies as well, short story collections.
Oh, you sneaky boy,
In between working themselves to death on their regular series, I just wanted to shout out a couple of these short stories that they managed to crank out, I assume on their smoke breaks, if anything else. Some of these short story collections or short story standalones, the first couple are interesting in that they become their own series.
Okay. So they are effectively pitches.
Yes.
They're not one shot. They're a pitch for a larger series that could happen.
A lot of times the one shots, as they say, will become pitches for longer series. And one of them that I do really like in that regard is Goku Rakugai Sanbandori no Ken by Sano Yuto, who started it as a one-shot, which is a very tight one-shot, tells a very tight story. It has incredible art, and I would be perfectly happy if Goku Rakugai was just this one-shot. I think it's really good. I really like Goku Rakugai as a series, and at some point when we talk about best-looking manga, that is definitely going to be in the conversation, because Sano Yuto... they are fucking killing it. It's really good.
Okay. All right. I mean, what's the pitch? Give me a pitch here.
Well, it's sort of like Butchigiri. It's sort of sci fantasy Chinese flavored setting where these two characters are fixers.
Okay.
They're kind of odd job men. They play it as if they're a little bit of a detective, a little bit of an odd jobber,
a little bit of country, a little bit of rock and roll.
Exactly. So we have our jaded older woman who has giant tits.
Okay. All right. I'm starting to get the bigger picture here.
And the younger boy that she works with, who turns out to have sort of a supernatural bent to his existence that allows him to tackle the supernatural elements that they clash with regularly.
Right, and they work at a bookstore together. Yeah, we talked about this.
It's good. I really like it. in a similar vein, Kakuyuji being the author of Hell's Paradise, and you know how much I fucking love that shit. This one piece, this one shot by Kakuyuji is called Evil Heart. It's not necessarily a progenitor of Hell's Paradise. It's actually a story about a very classic hero-villain conflict, but the hero is like a magical girl and the villain is one of the higher level mobs who falls in love with her. And so consistently sabotages his own evil organization so that he can get more chances to like meet her and get his ass kicked by her.
Tale as old as time.
Yeah. It's a cute little story. Obviously not the kind of story that could carry an entire series, but as a, this is probably, yeah, like maybe 50 pages, is perfectly succinct, very cute, and looks great. It's got lots of gags. It's got a lot of heart. It's a really great introduction to Yuji Kaku's style and sensibilities. And I hate to say this, but it is much better than Yuji Kaku's follow-up to Hell's Paradise, which is about a gangster kid trying to inherit his father's mafia, which is just bad.
Aww.
It's very bad. I don't like it. But Yuji Kaku is very talented, so you should read that one shot.
All right.
There is also sort of the takes by already famous mangaka. There is one by Ishida Sui, who from Tokyo Ghoul, Chojin X fame, obviously one of the greatest to ever do it. Truly like a luminary in this format. Did the Hunter x Hunter Hisoka origin story, as just playing around in that universe, which is very fun. He does sort of like a Joker-fied Hisoka as a child, becoming the Hisoka we all know and love. We get the iconic Hisoka slicking back his hair for the first time kind of thing. It's very much that, but it is very cute in a horrible evil way, and the art style, of course, being Ishida Sui just absolutely like flexing on everybody looks great. And it's fun to like jump back into that world because obviously there's not a lot of new Hunter x Hunter to play around with. In a similar vein, there was a brief run of One Piece covers, I guess. I'm not sure what you would call these, right? Like guest stories, guest spots.
And I don't know. Cover stories. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I'm not sure what exactly to cross over, except they're not crossing over anything. It's just Boichi, who is probably best known as Dr. Stone, but is one of my favorite mangaka for stuff like Origin and stuff like that. Again, maybe one of the best to ever do it. And this is very interesting, basically redrew a sequence of chapters from one of the earlier arcs of One Piece, but in his style, which is...
Oh, interesting.
I've never really seen that before. Just redoing an entire block of One Piece, but in their own manga style. It's very good and cool.
It reminds me of that time that... what's his face did like the full shot for shot remake of Psycho.
Oh yes, with Vince
Gus Van Sant.
Yes,
yeah,
the Vince Vaughn version.
Gus Van Sant.
Yes, very weird, except it looks very different from the One Piece because Oda's art and Boichi's art are very different. Apparently Oda liked it enough that Boichi went on to actually make an entire Ace origin story comic of his own, which is kind of cool. We get to see all of Ace setting out for the first time as a pirate, meeting Whitebeard and all that. Very cool. Very cool stuff.
Oda seems like he'd be fun to work with as a collaborator, you know, with other mangaka. He seems like a fun guy to be around when specifically in the context of working on One Piece.
Yeah, I mean, who knows though, right? So we've also got, just to shout out a couple. Now these are two. I'm cheating a little bit, but these are two short story collections. One being my favorite. I'll just shout it out. My favorite Junji Ito collection, Venus in the Blind Spot. This is, of course, the one where Enigma of Amigara Fault comes from. Obviously, this is the good one.
Yeah,
it's got his autobiographical story Master Umez and Me, where he talks about how reading Kazuo Umez as an elementary school, like, physically changed his brain.
Yeah.
Like, actually physically warped his brain in real time, which I find absolutely lovely and very relatable. And, of course, the namesake being one of the weirdest stories he's ever done. It's horrific, but it's not even, like, overtly a horror story. Venus in the Blind Spot is sort of about how this girl is so beautiful that it makes men dangerous to her, but it's sort of metaphorized in a weird, almost science fiction-y way.
Well, it sounds like an idea that gets extrapolated on in the Tomie series.
Yes, though, right? In Tomie, I feel it's a different take on it, because Tomie, of course, is like a malicious entity, whereas this girl mm-hmm. is... Mm-hmm. And it's like a story that's very empathetic to her and exploring that angle of male desire, which I think is very unique in his canon. And easy read. It's very short. These are like the shortest of his stories.
I mean, as long as we're on Junji Ito shorts,
yeah.
I want to shout out that one about his cats. I really like that one.
Yes, his cats.
Have you read that?
His work about his cats. Well, he does. He has a bunch of those.
Well, I have the first collection. Of those shorts where he talks about his cat and his wife's cat.
Yeah, his freaky cats.
Yeah, and they're very fun. I like them a lot.
Yeah, those are very good.
Yeah.
I've talked about Bathroom Guwa by Okazaki Imari previously, so I won't bring that one up, but I really like that one. There's also one called Nightmare Negotiator by Takahashi Yosuke, which is in a similar vein to this Junji Ito collection. It is just a very short, brief collection of bizarre horror stories. It's really, really good and a very unique art style. They weave in and out of like classic Japanese horror tales, like the guy who gives away turtles on the street corner. Are you familiar with that kind of like urban legend thing?
No, not at all. What?
It's a story about, you know, a kid who's walking home and there's a guy selling turtles out of a box and he's like, I've got a few left. You better buy them. And the kid's like, I don't know. I don't really have a lot of money. I shouldn't buy the turtles. And he's like, okay, that's fine. I'll just smash them with this hammer then.
Yeah.
And the kid's like, holy shit. No, okay, I'll buy it. And he keeps doing this, essentially, and I won't ruin the way it goes. But it ends with
some toxic waste, and you know, they turn into ninjas. Yeah, no, I get it. I've heard this
story. Yeah, it's a manga, of course.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
It's classic story.
All right,
story.
Remy. Anything else you want to get out?
Yes, let me just do the last two, which are famous serialized mangaka taking a shot at shorter stories, right?
Okay.
There's all right. One that came out recently by One.
Which one?
One Punch fame.
Oh, that one.
And Versus fame. He wrote a short story recently called Bug Ego, which is just a very fun, like, fairly brief comic story about a dude fucking with another dude, and that's
okay.
That's a
all
very
right.
good story.
Hey, speaking of, did you ever keep up with the Verses? He was doing that too, right?
Yes, I have been keeping up with Verses for the most part, but it still hasn't okay. really blossomed into like a coherent narrative yet. So, and I'm kind of
we'll
falling off of it. And okay, and this last one, which is maybe the most infamous of all of them and is a fitting wrap-up to this one-shot collection, I guess, is, of course, Gigantomachia by Kentaro Miura.
Hey, Miura.
One of the only times in his late career that he went off of Berserk to work on something else. He had done this a few times, so there's actually a few different ones, including one that's about like a time-traveling Genghis Khan. I don't know if you ever read that one.
No.
That's pretty good shit. But Gigantomachia is in the, like, golden period of Miura art where he had, like, really solidified his style, sort of like, you know, post-Berserk armor Berserk. Like, that style. And it is about a big wrestler guy and a little robot girl traveling a sort of kind of post-apocalypse desert world, destroying giant death machines.
All right.
And it just is insanely beautiful and just whips ass. Like, is just so fucking great. And it is a really great way to go back and read Miura stuff without having to like yet again restart Berserk. You get a nice like complete dose of Miura without having to read another like, you know, 400 chapters. So,
well, it's always appreciated to keep it brief.
Yes. Go out and explore non-serialized manga. I know that boggles the mind, but believe me, there's good ones out there.
But the question is, do they have waifus? Like, that's what I'm here for. You're forgetting that that's what we're all here for.
Well, let me tell you, this is maybe why one-shots are so unpopular. They tend to not involve a lot of waifus.
Oh, see, dropped. All right.
There's nothing to drop.
All right, well, that was an easy decision.
You read one chapter and you're done.
Don't listen to them, people.
You can't.
Do not go read these one-shots. Do not contribute to these authors. They are anti-waifu. They are anti-you. Wipe them off the face of the earth.
Here's my pitch to manga artists and comic artists in general. You can't drop a one shot. If you don't like the first chapter, guess what, motherfucker? You already read it all.
I already got you. As always, the only way to win is to not play the game.
Yes, I guess I should have preempted all of that with like, don't read manga. It's bad. And it's bad for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't read manga. Don't watch anime. It's bad. It sucks. That's why we're here.
It's encouraging children to drink alcohol. I mean, come on.
Real quick, I just want to say I really like that Fallout show. It's got little kids that smoke cigarettes.
Absolutely not. Funny. Okay, we're done. That's it. Yeah. We're done. Yeah. We're not entertaining Fallout shows.
No, watch that. Right. Don't watch that instead of anime.
Absolutely,
it's good.
Do not watch that. I'm ending the show now. We are not going to talk about Fallout. Beautiful and handsome listeners, follow us on the social media. Interact with the things and the posts. Review, I guess, tell other people to listen to the show at gunpoint, yeah. At knife point.
If need be.
Yeah.
You know, depending on your country's laws, just get a weapon of some kind.
Yes.
You know,
basically use any form of subterfuge or violence to get people to listen to this show. Not necessarily because it's good or valuable to culture, but because I want the number to go up. And
that's all we want.
I guess to quote our bartender friend, I think you've had enough.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
You can't stay here, folks. All right.
All right.
Bye. Kingdom of Heaven is like 5 hours long. Why isn't that the best movie ever made?